Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 12, Text 33. Start with the synonyms. Get this light working. Tat api pretam alakshya praattaraha achutta shoditaha tanam prahinam ajaru Udicham, Dishi, Purishaha. Tad api pretam alaksham. Pradataro chutya choditaha. Sanam prahinam ajurur udicham dishiburishaha tad abhi pretam alaksha rataro chuta chodita Danam prahinam ajur udicham dishibudashaha tad api pretam alaksha purattaro chuta choditaha danam prahinam ajur Udicham dishiburishaha. Please chant. Tadi vichatam alaksha. Danam pahinam ajurur. Udicham dishi burushaha Tada vipreta malaksha Prarataro chuchi choritaha Udicham dishi burushaha Ladies, please. Anyone else? taught his abhipretam, wishes of the mind, alakshya, observing, varataraha, his brothers, achyuta, the infallible, Lord Sri Krishna, choditaha, being advised by dhanam, riches, prahitam, to collect, ajaru, brought about, udichyam, northern, dishi, direction, udishaha, sufficient. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. Translation. Understanding the hearty wishes of the king, his brothers, as advised by the infallible Lord Krishna, collected sufficient riches from the north left by King Maruta. Please repeat. Understanding the hearty wishes of the king, his brothers, as advised by the infallible Lord Krishna, collected sufficient riches from the north left by King Maruta. So what follows is a brief biographical sketch of Maharaj Maruta, so that we have some background as to how and where Maharaj Maruta acquired a tremendous amount of gold. Purport. Maharaj Maruta, one of the great emperors of the world, he reigned over the world long before the reign of Maharaj Yudhishthira. He was the son of Maharaj Aviksit and was a great devotee of the sun god. We all got that? Not the sun god, but the son of the sun god, known as Yamaraj. Yes, Yamaraj is a son of the sun god Suryadev. His brother, Samvarta, was a rival priest of the great Brihaspati. This is a parenthetical statement, without parenthesis. The learned priest of the demigods. He, Maruta, conducted one sacrifice called Sankara Yajna, by which the Lord was so satisfied that he was pleased to hand over to him the charge of a mountain peak of gold. So that's how he got the gold. He did a sacrifice and he did it very well. And by very well, it means that he pleased the Supreme Lord. The Lord, being pleased, wanted to reciprocate and give something back. So what he gave is this big, gigantic mountain of gold where the Pandavas have gone to obtain gold so that Yudhishthira can perform a sacrifice, I should say three sacrifices, horse sacrifices. And the reason for this was to atone for innumerable sins that were created in the course of the Battle of Kurukshetra. He wanted to make sure that not only he, but anyone and everyone who fought in the battle would be cleansed as a result of these sacrifices. So it takes a lot of money to do sacrifices of this nature. And as it was, due to the war, much of the treasury had been gone through, had been finished. So they needed money, needed gold. And therefore, Lord Krishna advised, go north to King Maruta's golden peak or golden mountain, and there you will find plenty. So this peak of gold is somewhere in the Himalaya mountains, and modern adventurers may try to find it there. He was so powerful an emperor that at the day's end of sacrifice, the demigods from the other planets like Indra, Chandra, and Brihaspati used to visit his palace. And because he had the gold peak at his disposal, he had sufficient gold in his possession. So this king never became a poor man. when you have the blessings, the favor of Lord Krishna, which he did, obviously, because Krishna gave him his golden mountain, he always had plenty, not only for himself, but to give away if need be. And he was known as a very munificent, very charitable king. The canopy of the sacrificial altar was completely made of gold. Canopy now, which we normally have cloth or cotton or canvas. But here we have golden canopy. That means the gold is melted down and made into threads, and from the threads it's then woven in different ways in order to create particular type of designs. Sometimes you'll see gold spun on the outfits of the deities. You can see their little decorations, the different curlicues and things of that sort. This is opulence. So the canopy of the sacrificial altar was completely made of gold. In his daily performances of the sacrificial ceremonies, some of the inhabitants of the Vayuloka, the airy planets, were invited to expedite the cooking work of the ceremony. So in case some of us may be wondering, what is this Vayuloka? First of all, Loka is a planet, and Vayu is one of the chief demigods of air. He's in charge of air blowing, either too much or too little or just right. So his planet, or if he has many planets, so the inhabitants of those planets, they were invited to expedite the cooking work of the ceremony. And the assembly of the demigods in the ceremony was led by Vishvadeva. Anybody know who Vishvadeva is? Know what his business is? Because I don't. I'm sorry. No one? By his constant pious work, he was able to drive out by he. We're talking about the person I started talking about right at the beginning, Maratta. By his constant pious work, he was able to drive out all kinds of diseases from the jurisdiction of his kingdom. We can just imagine the amount of piousness that he had, that he was able to maintain such a disease-free kingdom. All the inhabitants of higher planets like Devaloka and Pitraloka were pleased with him for his great sacrificial ceremonies. Every day he used to give in charity to the learned Brahmins such things as beddings, seats, conveyances, and sufficient quantities of gold. Because of munificent charities and performances, does everybody know what the word munificent means? If you don't, raise your hand. Everybody knows? I'm going to call you, by the way. Okay? I won't kick you out if you don't know it. Okay, munificent, you know? Munificent. Pardon? Yeah, exactly, charitable, very generous type of mentality. So, the reason I asked these is that there are many words that I went through for many years, and I never knew the meanings of these words until finally, somehow or other, someone charitably disposed of some definition meanings, and I was able to learn them. So it's just important to understand the fullness of this wonderful purport that Prabhupada has given us. So the King of Heaven, Indradev, was fully satisfied with him and always wished for his welfare. So as we can see, he had good favor from the demigods, he had good favor from the Supreme Lord. Due to his pious activities, he remained a young man throughout his life and reigned over the world for 1,000 years, stayed young. For the pharmacists here, they would love to find out what this secret of this youth that enabled him to stay so young, because that's what we see so many advertisements of how to stay young. You know, this cream, this bottle, this capsule, so forth. Everybody wants to stay young, and at heart, we are all young. In the spiritual world, I don't know if anybody's really old. I've never heard of it, but generally speaking, anybody know about any very old persons in the spiritual world? I've never heard it, but maybe there is a few. Some of the elders up there who are playing the parts of Krishna's parents or Krishna's over. Generally speaking, Krishna is youthful and most of his followers are youthful in the eternal world. Due to his pious activities, he remained a young man throughout his life and reigned over the world for 1,000 years, surrounded by his satisfied subjects, ministers, legitimate wife, sons, and brothers. Even Lord Sri Krishna praised his spirit of pious activities. He handed over his only daughter to Maharshi Angira, and by his good blessings, he was elevated to the kingdom of heaven. Remember, this is he's an earthling, so now he has actually won the position of heaven. First of all, he wanted to offer the priesthood of his sacrifices to learned Brihaspati, but the demigod refused to accept the post because of the king's being a human being, a man of this earth. He was very sorry for this, but on the advice of Narad Muni, he appointed Samvarta to the post, and he was successful in his mission. The success of a particular type of sacrifice completely depends on the priest in charge. In this age, all kinds of sacrifice are forbidden because there is no learned priest amongst the so-called Brahmins who go by the false notion of becoming sons of Brahmins without brahminical qualifications. So Prabhupada makes a big thing of this, and quite rightly, there are so many Brahmins by birth, but not Brahmins by quality. So a person may be a Brahmin by birth, but by quality, he might be a Shudra. And Narada Muni, he makes a statement that we should regard the person by his qualities and not by his birth. And that's the real determination, not where you're born, because if you're born in a Brahmin family, but all your qualities are Shudra, then that's what we are. That's what we have to understand. But of course, because people want to lord it over the material world, they want to be important, they want to be powerful, therefore, a person who doesn't even have qualities will call himself a Brahmin. Not only will he call himself a Brahmin, but he will look down, he will look with disfavor on those who are not Brahmins. You know, a Shudra, a person who's a Vaishya, and so forth. No, he's small time, I'm big time. And sometimes if a Shudra will step on the shadow of a Brahmin, I'm talking about when I say a Shudra by birth, he stepped on the shadow of a Brahmin, a Brahmin will get very angry and shout and begin to curse him. How dare you step on my shadow? How dare you? Don't you know what the etiquette is? Like this. Interestingly, there's a nice little story in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, in which Lord Chaitanya had called for Sanatan Goswami to come and visit him. So Sanatan Goswami came, and he came through the pathway of the beach sand, which was blazing hot. So when he came, and Lord Chaitanya noticed, and he saw he had blisters already on his feet, and he said, how did you come? He knew how he came, but he wanted to hear. He said, well, I came by the sand. He said, why did you come by the sand? Why didn't you come by the regular pathway? He said, well, the regular pathway, there are many Brahmins, and they're walking back and forth. And he was known that he had in the past not only associated, but worked for the Muslims. And therefore, he was, although he had originally a Brahminical caste, but nonetheless, according to the Brahmins, he had lost his caste by having close contact with the various Muslims and even working for them. So he knew how they were regarding him, although, in fact, in truth, in reality, Sanatan Goswami was higher than the highest Brahmin. And Lord Chaitanya, of course, knew that. But Sanatan Goswami was a strict follower of Vedic etiquette. And whatever he did, he knew would somehow be known, because Lord Chaitanya would know it, and he would spread that. So Lord Chaitanya said, well, why did you come by this path, you know, by near the temple where everybody's walking? He said, well, because if I went there, many of the Brahmins would become upset and become disturbed. You know, I was stepping on their shadow, or I was looking on their face, or looking at their garments or something. So they would get upset because they would consider that a low-class man is coming on the path where the Brahmins walk. How dare him do that? This is their mentality. So Lord Chaitanya says, so why did you take the bait? He says, it's blazing hot. So Sanatana says, well, I just put it out of my mind. And I just wanted to keep in mind what would please you. And what would please the Lord is to not offend the Brahmins, because the Brahmins are very dear to Lord Krishna. We have in that prayer, Namo Mahabhadanyaya, Namo Mahabhadanyaya, Krishna Prema Padayate, Krishna, Krishna Chaitanya, Goda Tavijaya Namaha, Brahmanya, did I say it right? Huh? Namo Brahmanya. Okay, well, I did it wrong. Sorry about that. So, anyway, the important point that I'm trying to make is that Sanatana Goswami was willing to, eager to, suffer the burns on the bottom of his feet rather than offend the Brahmins who were there and create disturbance and upset. And this is the principle of sacrifice, just as we have the principle of devotional service. Whenever you see there's an opportunity to perform service, you don't have to worry, well, did I get Brahmin initiation or something like that, to pick up a piece of paper that's lying, or for a bunch of flowers that are lying on the floor, which devotees are stepping on, which is actually very offensive as well. These are flowers which have been offered to the Supreme Lord, and they should be respected and picked up and put in a respectable place. Like, you know, it's on the side. There's some flowers there right now. So a person who is very much into the idea of being very inoffensive or very respectable and very caring, very thoughtful, he will be very careful about how he treads, how he acts, how he speaks, how he moves his hands, how he moves his eyes, where he moves his eyes, because he doesn't want to create any problems. So Lord Chaitanya, in this particular incident, was extremely pleased. Not pleased to see that Sanatana's bottom of his feet were burned. He didn't like that because he was one of his favorite devotees. You don't want to see your favorite devotee's feet or hands or skin or anything burned. But because he was putting the principle of etiquette or righteousness above, not wanting to disturb, not wanting to upset, not wanting to rattle the false Brahmins, he took the position of a lowly person. And in doing so, this pleased Krishna, Srila Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, because Sanatana Goswami, he had the feeling, had the idea that he was really a nobody, even though he was a true, incredible somebody. This was his real position. But he never thought of himself that way. He thought of himself as just a nobody. And because he doesn't want to offend the somebodies, you know, the so-called Brahmins. This is a very nice attitude. And it shows genuine and deep humility. When he approached Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he didn't stick out his feet in front of the face of Lord Chaitanya. Hey, check out the blisters. Just see the opulence of humility I have. He never did that. He just came and did what he would normally do, as if he hadn't done anything special. That's another wonderful principle of persons who have humility. They perform humble services, but they don't necessarily make it known or advertise it or broadcast it. Look what I did. Look how many books I distributed. Wow, I played this kirtan and I had everybody jumping and dancing. I mean, there's no bragging. Because that devotee who is advanced and has accomplished and achieved that, he considers that whatever he has achieved, whatever he's doing, is coming by the grace of Krishna. So why should I take the why should he take the credit? The credit goes to the Lord, and the Lord gets the credit. It goes first to his spiritual master, and from the spiritual master, his prayer is that it be sent directly to the Supreme Lord, so that spiritual master will be blessed, and the devotee himself, who has that made that accomplishment, would also be blessed, so that he can give more mercy to so many more persons. So that is the mentality. And it's very blessed and something to not forget. That doesn't mean that we should all, as soon as it gets hot, be walking on the blazing sand. You have to have a mentality for that. This was natural and normal for Sanatan Goswami. But if in one's mind one is thinking, I'm going to do this great austerity now. Yeah, I'm going to do it. Watch me, Lord. Watch me. This is not the mood at all. This is all egocentric. We don't talk like that, first of all, to the Lord. And second of all, if you want to do that, then the best thing is start praying so that he hardens up the bottom of your feet and then enables you to do that. Yeah, Krishna can do anything, but not watch me, see how, and all that kind of talk. So that's all there is to this particular purport. And one of the main points of the purport is, I didn't finish it, I'm sorry. What was the last word? Did I get to the six? Okay, I'll have to try to find that. Okay, did I do the success of a particular type of sacrifice completely depends on the priest in charge? I think I did. In this age, all kinds of sacrifice are forbidden because there is no learned priest amongst the so-called Brahmins who go by the false, notion of becoming sons of Brahmins without Brahminical qualifications. In this age of Kali, therefore, only one kind of sacrifice is recommended. We don't want to leave this out. Only one kind of sacrifice is recommended, Sankirtan Yajna, as inaugurated by Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu Ki.
Jai!
Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu Ki.
Jai!
Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu Ki.
Jai!
All right. I think I should end it right here. Well, things are good. So, what I'd like to do is, because this is about purport, it's about King Bharata, who was very, very wealthy, but he was also very sacrificial. He was also very giving, very munificent, very grateful. And so I wanted to tell a short story about a very great king who was mentioned about a week ago. And his name was King Ranti Dev. King Ranti Dev is known as a great, great devotee of mercy. And he was famous for his mercy, for his charitableness, for his kindness. So that story happens to appear in a book that I wrote called Mystical Stories from the Bhagavatam. And so I wanted to tell the story, but then I remembered that there are once I told it, and there were a number of important parts that I forgot due to my Kali Yuga memory. So I thought, well, it's a very short story. Then why don't I just read what I wrote? It's a compression or abridgment, and we can all hear it, and there won't be any omissions of these very important points. Is that okay? Okay. King Ranti Dev. I'm starting. King Ranti Dev looked as though he were about to starve to death. Grave and trembling, he was so thin that his cheeks and eye sockets were deeply hollowed, and his rib cage and shoulder bones showed through his leaf-thin skin. And why not? He hadn't eaten even a morsel of food or drunk even a drop of water in the past 48 days. I'll repeat that. He hadn't taken a morsel of food or drunk even a drop of water in the past 48 days. But this morning, all that would change because he was now ready to break his fast. Surrounded by a few servants, the frail monarch doddered toward the dining hall. Wearing only a white dhoti, a green sash and a thin white shawl, Ranti Dev shuffled to a small platform where he sat down on a soft, thin, bluish cushion. Before him was a large table over which hung a small maroon cloth. Two servants then flanked and fanned him with yak-tail whisks, while another carried a tray of food and a goblet of water to the table, setting them down before the king. The meal consisted of hot vegetables and grains that had been carefully cooked in milk and ghee. Ranti Dev closed his eyes, folded his palms, and thanked God for providing him with this splendid repast. "My Lord, you are so merciful," he said. Then he opened his eyes and gazed at the scrumptious-looking food for a few moments, allowing his digestive juices to begin secreting. It's good to do that because then the juices grab the food and the food gets digested quickly rather than it going and then having to wait for the juices. As all the servants watched the king, they eagerly yearned for him to begin. Since he looked so emaciated, they wondered if he would even have the strength to lift the food to his mouth. Why was he now waiting? They wondered. Did he not have any appetite? They believed that if the monarch did not eat soon, he would surely die. And since, remember, 48 days, and since they all loved him immensely, they greatly feared for his life. "Please begin," they mentally begged. "Begin!" At that moment, the outside guard entered and began walking towards the king. However, one of the servants stepped in front of him and said, "What do you want?" I have a message for the king. It will have to wait. Our Lord is about to break his fast, but it's urgent." "What could be more urgent than the king eating? Can't you see that he's almost dead?" "Yes, but an offense may be committed." "An offense? What are you talking about?" As the king reached his hand out to take a morsel from the plate, the guard called, "My lord, there's a Brahmin outside the door. He said he wants to see you now." "Now?" asked Ranti Dev. "He's weak." "Yes, he said it was urgent."
"Oh, then please bring him in."
The guard exited and quickly re-entered, leading the Brahmin to the king. On seeing him, Ranti Dev stepped down from his seat and bowed before him. Straining to rise, the king asked,
"Oh, Brahmin, how may I serve you?"
"I'm very hungry," he said anxiously.
"Hungry? Well, you've come to the right home, right time."
The king asked one of the servants to bring another plate, which he did. Ranti Dev then seated the Brahmin on a comfortable maroon floor pillow and had a small table placed before him. The king then slowly scooped up half the food from his own plate, transferred it to the other plate, and gladly set it down on the Brahmin's table.
"Please relax and enjoy your meal," Ranti Dev said warmly.
The Brahmin began eating with obvious satisfaction. Standing nearby with his palms folded, the king felt more pleasure watching the Brahmin relish his food than if he himself had been eating it. That's an interesting how just by being pleased with somebody being relieved of suffering, how your ecstasy or joy or pleasure will increase. This pleasure enabled him to forget his own gnawing hunger. Exactly what happened. Several minutes later, the Brahmin finished. He then arose from his seat, thanked the king for his hospitality, and happily departed. Ranti Dev then cheerfully divided the remaining food in half and sent one part of it to his family members, who also had been fasting. The other half he reserved for himself. The king returned to his seat and gazed for a few moments at the food. At that moment, the guard re-entered the room. Again, the servant confronted him. "What is it now?" "Another urgency," the guard whispered. "Who?" "Some laborer." "What laborer?" I've never seen him before." "Tell him to wait till the king finishes eating." "All right." As he turned, the king called out to the guard, "Is there a problem?" "Just the laborer. He wants to see you."
"Oh, then bring him in."
"My lord," protested the servant, the laborer can wait till you're finished."
"Maybe he can't. Please bring him in."
"Are you sure?"
Yes, I'm absolutely positive."
The disappointed servant nodded to the guard, and in a few moments, the latter brought the scruffy laborer in.
Welcome, said Ronti Dave. How may I serve you?
This is interesting how he's greeting him. He's not chastising him for interrupting the meal. He's concerned more to relieve the pangs of hunger or whatever it might be than his own self. This is high, great Vaishnav mentality.
How may I serve you?
The king, being a spiritually advanced soul, did not see the laborer as a low-class man. Rather, he saw him as a spiritual soul, a particle of God, and thus equal to himself, also a particle. The laborer bowed to the king and then stood up. My lord, he said anxiously, I'm very hungry. Can you help me? Although the king's hunger was obviously greater than the laborer's, the monarch considered the laborer's more important.
Yes, I can, he said. Please, you come here. Come here.
So, the king seated the laborer on the floor pillow and had the servant cleanse the small table in front of it. After the servant brought the king... Notice he was not impetuous or impatient that, well, I don't have to clean anything. Let's get him out. Feed him and get him out. That was not his attitude. He felt he was feeding a guest. And a guest is to be thought of as God. So when you think of the guest as God, then you give the highest possible attention, care, and consideration. And that's what he did. He had the place wiped up. The table was just right. And then the king seated the laborer on the floor pillow and had the servant cleanse the small table in front of it. After the servant brought the king another empty plate, the latter divided the remaining food, there wasn't much remaining, by the way, into two portions, one for the workmen and one for himself. He next set the laborer's share of food on the table and then stood to the side. This is also very interesting. Watching him eat voraciously, the king was ecstatic to see relief and pleasure come into the laborer's face. When the workman finished eating, the king asked, "Are you fully satisfied?" "Oh, very, and thank you, my lord." He stood up, joined his palms, bowed his head, and then departed. Although Runty Dave's stomach was growling and his hands were trembling, the weakened king felt extremely happy. Here he transcended his physical distress. He was now ready to eat the small remaining portion of the food and drink the water. He sat down, smiled at his meal, and just as he reached out his hand, heard an unfamiliar sound. It was the barking of dogs in the outer hallway. Ronti Dave wondered why they were there and what they wanted. That was not the normal place for dogs to be. What did they want? And he heard the door guard shout, "You can't come in!" "Oh, please," entreated the unknown voice. "No, you take your dirty dogs out of here." I must talk to the king," insisted the man. "The king is eating. Now leave, get out," warned the guard. Ronti Dave called to one of his servants. "Who is that?" "Oh, just a man and his dogs. Don't worry, we'll get rid of him." What does he want?" "My lord, it's not important. Please, you eat. "Maybe it is important. Let him in." "In? Yes, but now, with or without the dogs?" "With." Notice he doesn't consider the dogs even a dog. Again, don't follow this. We shouldn't be bringing dogs into the temple here. This was a very advanced soul. And because he was so advanced, he was not seeing the dog as a dog. He was seeing it as a living entity, caught, trapped, captured in a dog body. This is something you can't imitate, and we can't do that kind of a thing. This was quite normal and natural to this king. The aggrieved servant signaled the guard to usher them in. The two dogs stopped barking, but they began pulling their master by their leashes toward the king. They smelled the delicious food on the plate and began panting. their drooling tongues flopping about outside their mouths. The dog's master looked like a vagabond, his hair and clothes disheveled, his face and hands covered with road dust. But the king saw them as God's children and as his own brothers. The dog owner offered the king an obeisance, then rose to his feet. "How can I serve you?" Ronti Dave smiled.
My dogs and I, we're very hungry. We haven't eaten for a while.
I'm sorry to hear that.
Can you help us?
Well, certainly. The king had the man sit down on the pillow and had the table before him thoroughly cleansed. Ronti Dave then picked up his plate of food and set it on the small table in front of the man, adding,
"May you and your dogs be happy."
The dog owner placed some of the food on the marble floor, and the dogs began gobbling it up with gusto. Then he himself began devouring the rest of the edibles. That was it. There was nothing more on the plate for the king. Standing to the side and empathizing with the man's and dog's relief and enjoyment, Ronti Dave could scarcely contain his ecstasy. He had now completely forgotten that he was even hungry and that his body desperately needed nourishment. But the servants there had not forgotten. Indeed, they were extremely sad. The last thing they wanted was for their king to collapse and die due to his charitable nature. Just looking at the monarch, so feeble, gaunt, skinny, and fragile, was more than they could bear. True, more food was being prepared for him now, but they wondered whether he would remain alive until it was delivered. Of course, there was still the goblet of water on the tray. Hopefully, that would sustain him in the meanwhile. Several minutes later, the man and the dogs finished their meal.
"Oh, thank you very much," said the dog to owner. "You're very kind."
"No, only God is kind," Ronti Dave replied. "And through me, he has fed you and your animals." Notice, he even gets in a bit of preaching here while the man and his dogs are about to leave. He doesn't let them go bye-bye. He tells him that this food has come from the Lord, and better you thank the Lord. This is his mentality. "No, only God is kind." The man nodded humbly, grabbed the dog's leashes, and led them out of the dining hall, their tails wagging spiritedly. A few moments later, another man in the hallway shouted to the guard,
"But I must see the king! I must!"
"Later," insisted the guard. "The king can't see anyone now."
"But I have to," exclaimed the man in a rough, uncultured voice.
Hearing the loud, pleading words, the king ordered,
"Let the man in."
But when the guard did, the servants were aghast. The man's primitive looks and shabby dress, by that they could discern that he was of the lowest class, an untouchable dog eater. They did not want to subject the king to such lowly company, especially now, while he was so weak and famished.
"My lord," said one servant, "you can see him later, after you've eaten and refreshed yourself, please."
But the king disregarded the advice and asked the dog eater,
"Why have you come to me?"
"Because I am tired and thirsty, very thirsty. I must have some water now."
He glanced at the king's filled goblet. Ronti Dave folded his palms, closed his eyes, and raised his head, and he began to pray. He said, "Oh Lord, I don't pray to you for the 8 mystic powers of the yogis, nor for salvation from repeated birth and death. I only ask that you let me stay among living beings and bear difficulties for them, so that they may be freed from all suffering. Would you like me to repeat that prayer? It's a very, very beautiful prayer. I don't pray to you, my Lord, I don't pray to you for the 8 mystic powers of the yogis, nor for salvation from repeated birth and death. I only ask that you let me stay among living beings and bear difficulties for them, so that they may be freed from all suffering. Then something amazing happened. This story is full of twists and turns. Take a deep breath and fasten your seatbelt. Then something amazing happened. The king stood up straight, appeared strong and energetic, and smiled joyfully. Opening his eyes, he turned to the servants and the guard and added, "Simply because I desire to give my water to this poor man who is struggling to live, the Lord has freed me from all hunger, from all thirst, trembling, dejection, sadness, and illusion." Ranti Dev clutched the goblet of water and handed it to the man, who gulped it down quickly. Then something even more astonishing occurred. The dog eater suddenly vanished, and in his place stood Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva. In fact, it was they who had appeared as the Brahmin, the laborer, the dog owner, and the dog eater to ascertain how great the king's quality of mercy was. The king respectfully clasped his palms and bowed down before them. When he bowed down before Lord Shiva, Lord Brahma. When he rose, he could have asked them for any benediction he desired and received it, but he didn't. This was because he knew he already had the greatest benediction, namely attachment and devotion to Lord Vishnu. This blessing had freed him from all materialistic desires, from the illusion that real happiness can be acquired from temporary, limited pleasures. Thus, although the king, while performing his daily duties, had dealt with countless materialistic matters, he had never been affected or disturbed by them because he was constantly conscious of the Lord's transcendental, peace-giving presence. That's a power. And anyone in the kingdom who emulated Ranti Dev's glorious example was blessed by his mercy to become a pure devotee of the Lord and live up to the highest ideals. I'll repeat that. And anyone in the kingdom who emulated, that means did the same thing, and anyone in the kingdom who emulated Ranti Dev's glorious example was blessed by his mercy to become a pure devotee of the Lord and live up to the highest ideals. Hence, many persons became truly self-realized persons. Yeah, just about ending now. But why had the monarch, and this is a very important point, but why had the monarch fasted for 48 days? The king was aware that he and many of his subjects, either in their past or present lifetimes, may have committed sins for which they had not yet atoned. We have this same situation with Yudhishthir. He feels that he hasn't atoned for all the killings that went on the battlefield, Kurukshetra, and he wanted to atone for it through this horse sacrifices. This meant that they would eventually have to suffer for those wrongs. To stave off such future distresses, Ranti Dev voluntarily accepted various kinds of suffering to pay for them. Now, he wanted to pay for all their sins. Knowing he was freeing his subjects from future misery and enabling them to become more absorbed in self-discovery and God-realization, the king felt great happiness and satisfaction, and so did the Lord God Almighty. Thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada ki. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. There's really no time for class for questions today, but if anyone has a question you'd like to come up, you're welcome to do so. Thank you for listening. Hare Krishna.
Thank you.